I'm Dr. Don McDonald. Welcome to Breaking the Underdog Curse, the podcast. I believe one of the most valuable things you can give yourself as a chiropractor is taking time. Time to become more inspired, present, and focused. Weekly, I'll be bringing you stories of triumph, mindset shifts, and lessons from people who are breaking through their limitations. In order for chiropractic to thrive, we must have thriving chiropractors. Now, let's get started. Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Breaking the Underdog Curse. This is Dr. Don McDonald, your host, and today I'm having scotch with my buddy, Dr. Ernest Lee. How are you doing, bud?
I'm doing well.
So for those out there, I met Dr. Ernest Lee, in like 2005?
Yeah, 2005. Yeah,
probably 2005 at a DeMartini seminar, and we've been awesome friends ever since. And so this has been my mastermind buddy. On a lot of podcasts, I talk about surrounding yourself with like-minded people, and this is my man in Edmonton. So I have a lot of people I hang out with around the world, but this is my man that I hang out with in Edmonton. So welcome to the podcast, brother.
Well, thank you, my man, my fellow man.
So just like I do, and this is funny because I usually do these interviews on the internet, and so we're kind of talking through the thing, and we're hanging out in my house having scotch. So this is kind of cool. So I like everyone to usually give a little little story about how you even became a chiropractor in the first place.
Well, I became a chiropractor because my parents, ever since I was a little kid, wanted me to be a medical doctor. Because again, it's their own, their own voyage in their life.
Yeah.
So my father groomed me to be a medical doctor. So I went through all the sciences and things like that. So I was actually in pre-med, and, for some reason, I didn't even go see a chiropractor until I was probably 21.
Right.
My mother used to go because she had back pain back in the day when we used to live in Nova Scotia. But myself, it didn't take. I was actually in pre-med, and I wrote my MCATs, so I was going to actually go to medical school.
Yeah.
And I ended up getting involved in 6 car accidents in about 24 months period. I know people look at me because I'm Asian.
Yeah, I was going to say, we're not going to be racist or anything here, but I just say that, I don't know.
I'm Asian, and of course, everyone says, hey, yeah, of course you got an accident, right? But the funny thing is, I think that's where I believe I was actually truly meant to be a chiropractor, because I wouldn't have discovered chiropractic unless I would have been through these accidents. Every single one of the accidents I was involved in, none of them were my fault. Surprise, surprise. I was a passenger, I think, in 4 of them, and I got sideswiped in, I think, one of them. I was just driving, and some guy was turning lane and sideswiped me, and I ended up in a ditch. And then the other one or two, I was rear-ended, just sitting in the stoplight. So, wow.
We talk about here, like, life is like who you hang out with, so maybe you needed to get new friends if all your friends were getting in car accidents.
Yeah, exactly. But I was at the time into weightlifting and exercise, and I was having a tough time just focusing on school because I was in pain, and so I was one of those guys who actually tried everything else and ended up going to see a chiropractor as my last resort.
Was it how many car accidents in did you finally see the chiropractor?
I think it was into car accident 5.
Oh, really? So all of it was just doing physio or massage?
Yeah, I started off with physio, and then did massage, Canadian Back Institute, and then my medical doctor said it was clinically depressed, gave me cortical steroid shots, and I mentioned chiropractic, and he told me not to go, but my massage therapist actually convinced me to go, and I went there, and I was like, wow.
Yeah.
In 3 adjustments, I think I felt better than, a year and a half of physio and massage combined.
Wow. And so was that chiropractor that you went to, was that more of a vitalistic chiropractor, or was he more
realistically, he was more of a, I would call him a mechanistic chiropractor, but yeah. I would, now that I think back to it, he was a powerful adjuster. So probably, the results I got was from his adjusting technique, and, he had some good certainty in his adjusting skills.
So. Yeah. So sometimes you have the good certainty, you're an amazing adjuster, but maybe you just don't have the communication skills to kind of explain what you're doing.
Exactly.
Right. I've had a few interviews where we've talked to
think it was Paul Reed. Was it Paul Reed? I can't remember who it was. I was talking to you, but like they said that their chiropractor they went to was like very certain in what they did, but they didn't say anything. They didn't really say anything why they're there. They just say, come here and come back at this time and blah, blah, blah. So did you decide right then that you wanted to be a chiropractor right after that?
Yeah, you know what? And then, you know, I spoke to my, you know, at I went to Simon Fraser University, and I spoke to a career counselor. And they suggested that I go, you know, follow around. You know, if you're going to do this every day of your life, you might as well just go see. And
like shadow?
Yeah, go shadow, right? So I went and shadowed my family doctor for a day. And I went to shadow the chiropractor for the day. And as soon as I did that, I realized really quickly I wanted to be a chiropractor.
Well, you're, and I always give you credit because you always will go and observe. You'll go, like I said, we just talked about that earlier. You've been to more seminars than just about anybody I've known because you are a researcher and you do like to go to find out all that stuff. So when how did you decide what school you wanted to go to and were you already done your prereqs for chiropractic school at the time?
No. So I actually graduated with, I believe, way more credit hours because I switched. There's slightly different courses I had to take to get my prereqs, but, you know, it allowed me to finish my degree and get extra certifications and things like that. But no, I ended up, I think, graduating with like 140 credit hours. And added to my student loan debt.
Yeah, no joke, just added all up.
Yes, but I, at the time I was living in BC, British Columbia, and I was born and raised in Nova Scotia. And there was only two other choices in Canada at the University of Trois-Rivières.
Trois-Rivières.
My French is getting bad. And CMCC, and you know, my parents used to live in California, and I always dreamed about going to California.
Yeah.
And at the time there was Cleveland, there was LACC and I believe Life West.
Yeah. And Palmer West probably.
On Palmer West, yes. Yeah. And I really had a aversion to Los Angeles. So I knew I wanted to be in LA and there was Los Angeles College of Chiropractic or LACC and Cleveland at the time. And I basically looked at the research and they said that the people that went to LACC had the highest rates of passing the Canadian board exams.
Oh.
And they said that it had more emphasis on science and research than philosophy.
Right.
Because I had no idea what chiropractic philosophy was.
Right.
Yeah, so I chose LACC.
Well, it's a huge thing because I know when I went to school at Palmer, the big warning is Canadian boards are so hard. So you've got to make sure you pass Canadian boards or else you can't come back and practice, right? So that would make sense. If you didn't know anything about the philosophy, you pick that. So you go to LAC, you go to big LA, Hollywood,
yes,
California.
Absolutely.
And how did that go? Did you kind of get into the philosophy right away or did it take you a while? What was your journey through school?
Canadians in general, I believe when I went down to LACC, I'm not coming from a family that had a lot of money. So at the time I went to school, I believe our Canadian dollar was worth about 61 cents to the American dollar. So I was very thankful that LACC actually gave us like a 25% discount if you're a Canadian to kind of make up for the dollar difference. But still, it was very expensive. And so I had to get student loans. And I worked all the way through chiropractic school actually to try to, offset my chiropractic tuition.
Just for the living
expenses. Yeah. So, my LA experience was, so when I first got there, I was like, okay, well, I took it very serious. And, we'd have a little assignment and I'd spend like write an essay on like a little paragraph question that they had, right? Because I was like, okay, well, I can't afford to fail
a
grade or anything. Like, I don't want to take this again.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
So I was very studious my first three semesters. And then you'd have guest speakers coming to campus and, I'd meet other chiropractors and they would tell me how hard it was. It's like, oh, you're a chiropractic student. And, I wouldn't want to be you now. I'm like, it's such a tough market. Oh, you're in Canada. I hear it's even tougher up there.
Yeah.
Right. And
really encouraging.
Yeah. So I've actually considered, if you ask some of my friends and
colleagues and classmates back then. I was a little bit of a downer actually after my year one, because I spent a lot of my money, you know, going down to go to school here. And I had no idea about this chiropractic philosophy thing. I didn't know what it meant. I'm like, well, what is this? And the teachers there were kind of, professors were like, you know what? It's not really, chiropractic philosophy isn't really science based. And, you know, so it really confused the students a lot. And at the time I was like disheartened. I'm like, did I make the right choice? Should I go back to med school? And actually my roommate at the time, back in LACC, he actually he quit chiropractic school and went back to med school.
Really?
Yeah.
So you were the only one. There's a bunch of you in the class.
Yeah. So literally, you know, and he was a Saskatchewan actually. And yeah, he ended up going to med school. And yeah, I was the last. And of course we would have these conversations and he's like, what the heck am I into? Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, because his father was a medical student, and I was actually a medical doctor. So so he ended up going back to med school, and I stayed in chiropractic school. But I guess right around that time, when I felt pretty low, some of the the higher term students would come up and say, "Hey, they talk about going to certain seminars and talk about speakers." And so the first seminar I went to was a California Chiropractic Association seminar.
And, oh, okay.
And I got a lot of those, it's tough to be a chiropractor.
At the seminar?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, all the doctors. There was no one uplifting guy at that one?
Not really. And they were talking, at the time, they were talking a lot about, the workers' compensation, talking a lot about, the politics of chiropractic, insurance companies like cutting off chiropractic coverage. So it was a lot of down information. Like, yeah,
if you absolutely want, we could all just jump off the bridge and
exactly
like, together.
And then the next seminar I went to, I believe it was actually, I think my first one was Parker had a seminar in Anaheim, California. I don't think they did it anymore, but yeah, they had one right near Disneyland, and that's the first one that I realized, I'm like, ooh, this is different, because I'd meet the chiropractors there, and instead of saying, oh, there's so many chiropractors, they'd be like, oh, you're a student? That's awesome, dude. Because there's not enough of us here. And then and then it'd be this weird love fest where people would like giving me a big hug and and they're like, oh, this is not like LACC or the other conference, right?
Yeah.
And then I believe the very first time I actually got the, aha, big idea moment was when I listened to Jim Sigerfus.
Nice.
So he spoke there. And
that was the first time I ever heard Jim. Was
that seminar.
Wow.
And I was like seeing this grizzly old man, I'm like, with this big beard. And everyone else was in like kind of like a suit or like dress shirts. And this guy comes on in sweatpants.
He doesn't give a crap at all.
Yeah, like, for sure, for sure. He comes in and just
makes fun of every single exhibitor in the
exhibitor hall. Exactly. Yeah, for sure. And he comes in and starts spitting out chiropractic truths, and and I was like, wow, this is chiropractic. So of course, Sigerfus is from the complete opposite extreme. So, but at the same time, I was really motivated by success, and finances back then, because I'm like, I basically am in so much debt right now.
Well, and you grew up with nothing too.
Yes.
Like, we both grew up with
Right? Yeah. Very blue collar parents. Yeah. And, definitely instilled the work ethic, and realistically speaking, I was like, I got to make this chiropractic thing work, right? Because I can't just quit and, waste my first year or year and a half of chiropractic fees and
coaching. You're like buying a car basically and then just driving it off of a cliff.
Yeah, no kidding.
So you saw Sigerfus, and then I'm just interested, did you kind of get a little bit caught fire, and then did you go back to your school and then tell other people about it or anything like that?
There was a group of people that would go to these things, and then suddenly, I did catch fire. I think at the time they were trying to recruit people for the, ICA, the International Chiropractic Association. So my friend, DJ LeDrew, him and I basically became like the
co-presidents of the Student International Chiropractic Association, and we started inviting speakers to come on LECC campus. And and then you'd listen to some of these guys, and they'd be like, okay, well, you know, there's you can come shadow my office anytime. You can come, you know, check out my place, go check out this speaker here. And I realized very quickly that, you know what, it's actually a good idea to go check out some of the high flyers. And in California, I believe at the time there was like one chiropractor for every like 900 residents there. So there's a huge density of chiropractors. So I went and listened to, you know, when we'd have speakers and they'd give me advice, they'd be like, go see as many chiropractors as you can, see the successful ones,
yeah,
and see their different styles. So I went and observed and hung out with them and got to know some of them, and they'd give me some hit tips, and I'd write them down in my little book and try to store them. And they were getting poached by some people, and they'd be like, hey, as a student, you get to go for really cheap. And and I'm like, oh, really? And I look at what the doctors paid, and I look at students paid. I'm like, wow. And that's when I started becoming a seminar junkie.
Yeah. And how far was that? Was that your second year?
I think I was in my second year. Second year for sure. I think third, fourth, fifth, sixth. I basically would, yeah. I remember I used to recruit. There's a guy named Bruce Parker. I remember he used to teach. I guess he was a Parker speaker.
Yeah, he was in the day.
And I went to, I remember I was the only student that went, I guess he was only charging $99 for his seminar, and I sat there, and I was the only student there, and everyone found out I was a student.
Yeah.
And then he goes, and I think I went to three of his seminars in a row for $99, and he comes up to me, he goes, hey, you're a student. He goes, wow, you're very studious. He goes, well, you know what? If you can get me some other students or get me on campus, like, I'll let you come to these things for free. Right. So I started recruiting students for him, and I'd go to these seminars. And,
nice.
Yeah. And I'd learn all the scripts and things like that. And, you know, again, even at I believe Parker seminars in Vegas, we went to every single one of those. And as a student rate, you get them really cheap, right? I mean, yeah. It was $50 at the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
So for any of you students listening, and like, as a student, go to as many of these seminars as you can as a student.
Oh, yeah. And too, you can see kind of the heavens through the clouds, right? Because sometimes you get all bogged down in all your anatomy classes and your CNS and PNS and all those kind of things. And it's nice just to step back and kind of get your eyes focused on the prize. It's like what I always used to do in school. When I was studying for exams and I was lacking motivation, I'd like drive around the fancy neighborhoods and look at all the fancy houses. And I'll be like, okay, I got to keep working because someday that's going to pay off.
Absolutely.
That's cool. So then what year did you graduate?
I graduated in 2004.
And then how did you move to Edmonton? Like, okay, we live in Edmonton. Ernest grew up in Vancouver.
I was born and raised in Nova Scotia. Yeah. But I moved to Vancouver, I believe, in 1992 or 3.
Yeah.
Right. So I think I only did grade 12 and went to university in Vancouver. And then I ended up in LA. And at the time, my brother was living in Edmonton. And, you know, I got used to living in the sun a bit. But I got living in Los Angeles, as some of you people in LA can attest to, the traffic is atrocious. And the traffic in Vancouver is terrible as well.
Yeah.
So I felt like, you know, after living in a big city, I believe at the time there's 14 million people living there.
In LA?
I felt like, you know what, I don't know if, you know, and Vancouver's a very big city too, and a lot of heavy traffic, and it rained all the time. So it's like, you know what, I don't mind the cold. And my brother tells me that Edmonton's a good city. Yeah. So I went to check it out, and he offered me, the big kicker was he offered me a place to stay for 6 months rent-free. I just had to pay his condo fees and utilities. So I'm like, done.
You can't go wrong.
Exactly. So, so I ended up, opening a practice right out of school.
Yes. Now that, and again, I know a lot of these stories because we've been buds for a long time.
Yes.
And for, you know, there's a lot of, and actually I've had a few shout outs from some students and some new grads that are just opening their practice that through social media, saying these are helping, these podcasts are helping them get their motivation on to open their practice. You have an amazing story. So those people who want to be really gung-ho and keen, you should listen to how Ernest opened his practice, because he's probably one of the fastest openers I've ever seen in my life. So tell the story about opening.
Yes. So
how you worked your ass off.
So the first piece of sage advice I'd like to give is, desperate people do desperate things.
Right? Yeah.
My wife at the time was, I believe, 8 months pregnant when I first moved to Edmonton. And we had our first son, Edison, I believe on June 30th. And I opened the practice on July 7th of that year.
So a week after he was born.
The week after. So at the time, I was like, I basically opened, I believe we opened the practice for $13,000.
On credit cards? Was it?
My wife, on credit cards, which were bouncing. I had credit cards, and I know I'm just getting emotional just thinking about this, but my wife and I painted the office. We had some Tony's tables or Lifetimer tables, portable tables as our we were able to find a very young girl that worked our front desk that we paid minimum wage to.
Right. At the beginning, she'd be making the most money out of anybody.
Yes, absolutely. I had to make money the first month, or I don't think we would have been able to survive the first month.
You have 30 days to give her a shot.
Exactly. So, I don't advise this for most people, but, if you have a gun against your head, you're going to basically hustle. So I booked screenings initially. So I booked 11 screenings in the first 3 weeks. I didn't have money.
Let's just think about that. 11 screenings in the first 3 weeks.
Yes.
Like, there's many chiropractors that have never even done 11 screenings in their whole life.
Yes.
And this is the first 3 weeks of practice.
And I didn't know anyone in the city other than my brother.
Right.
Yes. So what I did was, I didn't have any money to pay for screenings as well. So
it's just two dishes or what?
And that's where I can thank some of my, coaches in the past, and some of the seminars I went to, and some of the doctors when I was a student. I remember as a student at LACC, when California Jam was just, people showing up at Bill DeMoss's office, and you'd have a keg and, big box wine there. And
that was the Dead Chiropractic Society.
Yeah. But this was in the early days, right?
Yeah.
And this was when Billy D used to drink.
Yeah. There's lots of good stories by
that. Oh yeah, yeah. And all the trade secrets would flow those nights. Right.
Yeah.
But you learn a lot from those guys, and I'm very thankful that they shared this information with me, because I was able to come out and I knew what to do. And as soon as I, got my license, I was just, I was trying to do anything I could to, put food on the table and, pay rent and make my credit card payments. Right. So I booked 11 screenings in my first 3 weeks of practice, and I didn't pay for any of the screenings because I actually donated all the proceeds to the food bank.
Yeah.
And, we opened our clinic the first, 2 weeks after. We had two TV stations and the food bank and the mayor in front of my little 970 square foot office.
Yeah.
Me
and Ernest are king of the small office, baby.
Yes.
Lean and mean.
Lean and mean. Lean and mean. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So we ended up at the end of the first month making rent, because I think at the end of the first month, I went from 0 to 90 patients a week. At the end of 3 months, I was up to 180. And after 6 months, I was over 250.
So 250, that's a huge growth. That's amazing. So everyone, it's possible. You just have to work your tail off, right?
Oh yeah. I think, my wife still resents me because of the fact that I, basically was working 6 days a week and screening every weekend.
Yep. But you did it. Like, again, yeah,
you had to do it.
I think part of life is figuring out, and then there's no really such thing as balance, because you have to go off balance. talents to get stuff done, right? Yeah. But it's correcting that earlier. And so that's why it's nice. Did you ever hear anybody ever say, like, be careful for balance, because if you work too hard, like, it can throw off your personal life?
Oh, absolutely.
You heard that before?
Oh, absolutely.
Like, before you were in school?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, sometimes you have to still do it, right?
Absolutely.
I just said that we have Dr. Curtis Fisher is our new associate. And I said, there's lots of things I can tell you. And I know you just have to do it anyway, right? So sometimes you have to learn from inspiration or warnings, and sometimes you have to learn from just the experience. So, but that's pretty impressive to be able to do that.
Well, again, right, I learned how to do it. And I was telling Dawn earlier, actually, Brandy used to work in my office for a bit. She was helping me out when I had some staffing issues. But, you know,
and actually, the CSU help hired is still there.
Yeah. And the funny thing is Brandy made this comment once to me. She goes, wow, you are fast. I wish I get Dawn as fast as you. and realistically,
don't worry, she told me that one too.
Yeah, and I was telling Dawn, I'm like, I'm not half as fast as I used to be now. I'm like, you know, again, I think back then I just started everything like with that mentality to see volume.
Yeah,
and you know, I would have everyone's like, okay, well, before your first adjustment, you know, I need to lay face down, decompress. I'd be so. I was such driver mode at that time, right? Yeah. You met me the first time you met me, right? I was, you know, to go back to that state, right? To just, you know, you'd have to put a gun to my head again to do that, right? But at that time, like now I practice out of, you know, what we call the love level, right? We go to work because we love to go to work. But back then it was like,
you had to.
Yeah, we had to.
The need to, because you had, yeah. And that's why it's good to get going and then kind of get into that. To the cruise mode where you're kind of we're still growing, but we're doing it because
exactly things. Right. And realistically, I graduated with a big head, you know, because I went to a lot of seminars. Actually, the funny thing was when I graduated, we had these like side awards, and they voted, my class voted me the most likely to be on an infomercial. And the most
you might still win that one.
And the most likely to teach his own seminar one day. It's just, you know, the funny thing is I've done both. Right? Yeah. I actually have done an infomercial, but I guess I've done some forms of infomercials.
Yeah,
for sure. I think if you've done any marketing for a chiropractic practice, you have done some kind of infomercial.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah, for sure.
So that's pretty cool. So then it gets up to about 2005 and when we meet. And so this is a funny story from my perspective because, again, at a Parker, I see John DeMartini and he's like the most amazing thing I ever saw. Like he almost like everybody was crying and like it was at, I can't remember what hotel it was at, which is the one off the strip, the one that's
it was Mardi Gras, the Hilton.
Mardi Gras.
Oh, no, it was a Rio.
The Rio. So he's at the Rio and the room was packed, standing room only. And it's just full to the rafters. And I'm like, this is really cool. And then I go back and see him in the exhibitor hall. And I'm like, your talk was really good. Just kind of like a fan going up to him. And he said, where do you live? And I said, in Edmonton. He says, give me your card because I have seminars in Calgary and you need to come to it. And he said, give me your card and we'll contact you. And so I gave him the card. And so then I was on his email list and I saw this thing called the Breakthrough Experience in Calgary. And I'm like, oh, cool. He invited me to go to seminar. And then I see this price of the seminar. And it's like $1,200. And at the time I'm like, are you kidding me? $1,200? There's no way I can spend $1,200 to go to a seminar. And I seriously probably watched two or three of them go by and not do it until one day I had when we were talking on our podcast earlier with Brandy, I had the talk with Brandy in Calgary where she's like, dude, you got to live up to your potential. Like you're just not even close to living up to your potential. And like, I can't hang around a guy that is always like firing on half cylinders. Like there's no way I see all these other guys and they're no better than you. Then why, what's wrong with you basically? And so I go to the seminar and then you come up and introduce. And then the funny thing is I didn't realize that at the time, but you'd introduced yourself to me at the airport before, right?
When we were at Parker. Yes.
Yeah. And he's like, I'm just a new grad in Edmonton. And I didn't remember that till afterwards. So why don't you tell the listeners a little bit about, how we got to go for dinner, that same seminar with DeMartini, and how we almost, I almost had a heart attack.
Yes.
Actually, I think we both almost had a heart attack.
Yes, and yes, died. Absolutely. So I was the same way with Don, where I saw Dr. DeMartini as well. And the big thing that, you know, as an Asian guy, we come from a family background not to show our emotions. And one thing, when I see this guy sitting there crying on stage and, you know, making me cry, I'm like, wow, I got some weird attraction to this guy. It's almost like my heart and my gut says, you know, I got to go learn more. Right. And one of my favorite lessons from John DeMartini was one of his quotes is his definition of a genius, because he says that a genius is one who listens to the light of their soul and obeys. And I know that, you know, every day I would go to his website and I would check on his price, and I'd be thinking back and forth. Should I go? It's so much money. Oh my gosh.
Maybe it's like a seat sale.
Yes. And then I had a friend of mine, one of my dear friends who, you know, passed away not too long ago, Dr. Richard Tapper. Mm-hmm. But he went to a breakthrough, and I would call him. We would talk on the phone maybe 3-4 times a week. And he went to a breakthrough, and I would ask him all the time, oh, is it worth going? Is it worth the money? I'm like, it's so much money. I'm like, I can't afford it right now. I'm like,
yeah,
you know, I've got, you know, two little kids, and we're living in, you know, a loft with no bedrooms. And, you know, my wife wants us to get a house.
Yeah.
I'm like, should I do it? And he goes, just do it. I'm like, fine. So, but, you know, and then I, yeah, and then we went, and, you know, of course, it blew our mind. And, you know, we talked to Dr. DeMartini, you know, personally saying, hey, we're chiropractors at Edmonton. And, you know, at, and I believe at the time there was only like maybe 2 or 3 chiropractors.
Yeah, there's only in the whole seminar.
In the whole seminar. And they said, and then he goes, and then they were offering consultations. And he said, yeah, we can do private consultations or group consultations for, you know, $500 an hour.
Was it? Or was it?
Or is it $650 an hour or something? Yeah, $650 an hour or something like that. And Don and I are like, well, do you want to go split one? And we can maybe ask him chiropractic specific questions. And then Don was like, I don't know. Should we? I'm like, well, I'll split it. If you split it, it'd be like a 45-minute conversation trying to figure it out.
We'll have a timer, and as soon as we know what's
yeah, like, and then a friend of mine, one of my students, like, best friends too, who graduated with me, who lived in Calgary at the time.
Yeah,
and he wanted to go to the seminar, but he wasn't like us at the time, where he's like, oh, I can't afford it. He didn't go, but he met us at the seminar. And and then at the end, I'm like, okay, well, do you want to go pitch in with us? And he goes, no, I can't afford it. So I'm like, oh, okay, you can just come, I'll pay for you, right? So we
go for dinner, right? Yes, that's what we did. And Ernest says, should we ask DeMartini for dinner? And I'm like, and then me, as my personality, I'm like, yeah, but you ask him.
Yes, yes. Yes. And then, so we went for dinner with Dr. DeMartini, and there was the three of us, Carp, and we were going under the assumption that we were paying $650 an hour, U.S. at the time, right?
Yeah,
which U.S. was probably about, you know, $800-$900 Canadian
an hour.
Yeah. And so, of course, you know, I said Don, I'm like, well, if we're paying for his time, I'm asking the questions.
Yeah, and it's funny because I'm like, totally would never ask those questions, but like Ernest is asking hard questions, and he was getting good feedback. And like that, and the thing that we freaked out is, as soon as I looked down at the clock, I realized we were out for dinner for 3 hours, and I'm like elbowing Ernest, going, dude, it's 3 hours. Like, we just came to this most expensive seminar. Now we're going to be bankrupt after this. And Ernest is asking questions like, so what's your net worth? And he's like, what do you think my net worth is? And what did you say?
20 million?
Somewhere around 20 million. And he goes, oh, it's pretty close. We're like, and I was like, it was a tough question. So, but we had a great time. And so at the end of the seminar, or at the end of the dinner, I remember, thank goodness, all he eats is salad.
Yes, he ate salad and the strawberry at the end.
And the strawberry at the end with water, right?
Yes.
So good thing he didn't drink and eat lobster and stuff like that. But so we paid for his dinner. And then at the end, you can tell everybody what he said at the end, which was pretty cool.
Yeah, he said, but no charge.
No, what he said was, you know what? This was really enjoyable. I really had a good time, and I felt it was in fair exchange because I got something out of this. It wasn't, even though we were peppering him with stuff, yeah, but he was having a good time. He said, because, you know, you guys are, you know, so you guys are pretty young guys.
Yeah.
What I want you to do is take what you would pay for my consultation and start your immortality count.
Yes, I remember that. Yes.
And I did. And I totally, did you start right at that
time? Yes, I did.
Yeah, we both were like, done. And so I went home and I think I put like $1,000 or something like that into my immortality account. And we started trucking on that sucker. And then we started meeting regular after that.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And I remember that.
That was crazy. So tell me some of the different seminars that you've been to that have been most impactful for you. Besides that one, because obviously that was a huge trip.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, actually, Don and I became, disciples of John DeMartini. And Don, you know, it would invite him to Edmonton and learn some good hard lessons.
Twice I got my butt kicked bringing him to Edmonton.
Yes, but that's how we got a start on seminar planning. That's why he's so great at it. Why I'm so thankful for those experiences.
Thank you for paying lots for those stressful
things. Yes, absolutely. So the wonderful thing was, I was seeing, 250 patients a week at the time, I think during that time, but I wasn't collecting a lot of money because I was giving away a lot of my care in care plans. And the fact that I valued myself enough to pay for a seminar like that, for some weird reason, the very next month my collections went up, even though the volume stayed pretty much the same, but it instantaneously went up $10,000 a month. Inexplicable, it just went up. Mm-hmm. Right. And I think that's one of the lessons I got out of it. It's like, you know what, when you choose to value yourself, right, if you don't value yourself, the universe and people won't value yourself either, right?
Yeah.
Tony Robbins always says that, one of my favorite sayings with him, he goes, the quality of your life is dependent on the quality of your questions, right?
Yep.
And, you get in life what you tolerate, mm-hmm. right? So, Don and I didn't tolerate not going to the seminar, obviously, right? Because obviously it would have haunted us if we didn't go, or it would just keep eating up our, our thought process in our brain, right?
We just keep going back and checking the website every day.
Exactly, until we eventually did go. So, I'm glad we followed our genius and went. It just, opened up some new doors. And, I believe we started going to every single one of our seminars multiple times and learning them. In fact, Don brought them to Edmonton, and I believe there's a minimum fee that DeMartini's guaranteed, and Don had to guarantee that time. And at the same time, I'm like, oh, he's in Edmonton. So I hired him actually to come into my office to go through every single one of my procedures. And it would have been really expensive. I had to actually fly him in from Houston to do it. So thank you.
Way to piggyback off my expenses.
Oh, sure, absolutely. Right. Absolutely.
You recorded it though. It was funny because you came back from the meeting basically saying you got your butt kicked. Like, didn't you just annihilate all your procedures?
Well, the funny thing is I, that's when I was starting to learn to value myself, and at the same time, learning about money. As chiropractors, we were taught to, give, right?
Yeah.
And, give for the sake of giving, right? Love for the sake of loving, right? Yeah. And so I think Don and I both were one of those types where, we would adjust people and, it's like, we just need to help these people, right? And of course, but, we never expected much back.
Yeah.
So after DeMartini, we realized, one of the best things he did for us is he charged us. He never gave us a discount, and other than that one time, right?
Yeah.
But, he made us accountable. So, he would think of one of his big rules. Remember, he would be like, for savings, right?
Yeah.
Like, save a portion of your income, and, every 3 months, increase it by 10%.
Yeah.
So, I'm like, okay, well, the quality of your life depends on your quality of question. So I'd ask myself, well, how can I get paid to actually bring DeMartini to my office? So I don't know if you remember this, but I actually recorded the actual consultation, and I actually sold the CDs of my recordings to my mastermind group for $100 a person. So I'm like, well, I paid way more than this, but here, use a recording and you can listen to everything I listen to. So I actually was able to knock down a good chunk of that.
That's cool. Yeah. Well, and speaking about, again, we always like to talk, there's always the victories, right? We always have victories, but we always have the defeats. And part of life is being able to come out of the defeats as quick as you can. And talking about not valuing money so much, we both got burnt pretty bad from a bad investment with a few other chiropractors in Edmonton. And I was wondering, just talk a little bit about that, because this is super good warning for chiropractors out there. Because one of the things I heard from Greg Stanley, I think he's an accountant guy, right?
Whitehall.
When I was really young in practice, he said, for one, he said you should save your age. And I think I was 31 at the time. So that means I'd have to save $31,000 a year. And I thought he was insane. I'm like, are you kidding me? There's no way I can save $31,000 a year. That was the first thing. The second thing he said is, chiropractors, you don't have to worry about so much about what you're going to make in your investments. You need to worry about not losing your investments. And I was like, oh, really? And then I just kind of filed it in the back of my head. So maybe you just talk a little bit about our story, just as a warning for chiropractors out there, in case, you know, this comes up to you. We got to value our money so we don't throw it down the drain.
Absolutely. Well, I believe my life was, you know, at the time, you know, you just listening to me, tremendously out of balance, where I would spend, you know, I'd be at the office or screening or marketing or learning.
Yeah.
Right. You know, my perception of chiropractic was at the time, wow, this is a lot of work. That's rewarding, right?
Yeah.
But it's a lot of work.
And if you don't work, it stops.
Exactly. Right, right. And of course, when you have a new practice, right, you only have a certain amount of patient files. So, you know, when you have, you know, let's say 100 patients and, you know, they're all starting at three times a week, there you go, 300 patients a week, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, again, through the years, if you're able to retain them, of course, you can have a much more stable practice, which Don and I have now.
Yeah.
But, you know, for the young guys out there, you know, it takes a while to be able to get that stability. But, so we have this fantasy about, oh, you know what, the other side must be nicer to be able to be, you know, not have to work. And to have your passive investments, you know, to be able to go into your clinic and, you know, just work for the sake of working and have your investments, you know, pay your, you know, everyday bills and, you know, be financially free.
Right.
So, of course, you know, we're looking for those opportunities. Of course, your reticular activating system will always, you know, amplify what your voids are and what you're looking for. And, you know, I met one of Don's friends actually, and he was a real estate investor who went to a lot of the DeMartini seminars. And so we thought, okay, well, this is a like-minded individual who believes in fair exchange.
Yeah.
And we ended up investing quite a bit of money with them.
Yep.
And yes, unfortunately, we lost a lot of money with them.
Right. Yeah. So that's just one of the key things. And one of the interesting things, we'd already taken financial mastery as well with DeMartini. And he talked about how if you're going into anything that's kind of out of the blue or something that's off the sidelines, you never want to give more than 10%. You never want to invest more than 10%. And I was lucky enough to kind of keep in that range. A lot of other people didn't, because again, if you're kind of getting mesmerized with amazing returns, like 18% return every year, compounding interest, blah, blah, blah. And it's in real estate deals that they're doing, that's probably unrealistic. And then a lot of people put in way more than that 10%. So,
yes.
So just from guys, and again, we take it as a learning experience. It was our own stuff. Right.
Yes.
And so we had to move on from that, and it's hard to move on from a huge hit like that. But if you can remember, no more than 10% into something that's,
and you know, earn your right to risk.
Yes.
One of the other lessons we learned. Right.
Yep.
You know, you go from safe investments, and you work up to, you know, different varying forms of risk. Right.
Yeah.
You know, if you you know, I read this book once, and they said that, you know, if I paid you a dollar to cross your street right now, so Don lives in a very quiet neighborhood, and if I said, hey, Don, I'll give you a dollar if you cross your street right now, he'd probably do it, and most people would.
Yeah.
That's easy money, right?
Yeah.
But if I said, hey, I'll pay you a dollar if you pass, you know, the I-5 down in LA, which is probably a 7-8 line you know, cars going, you know, 65 miles an hour, he'd probably say no way. But right. You know, if I said I'll give you $1,000 to cross this, you may consider it, right? Right. Play chicken with those cars. So, you know, again, what we did was, you know, we crossed that, you know, 7-lane freeway when we didn't earn the right to do it, and we did too much of it.
Yes,
for sure.
And that brings us to the other thing too, is that we talk about sometimes being, you know, looking at the grass is greener on the other side of the fence, and you've had a long, extensive history with restaurants. And so, and I never got to say this at the beginning, but Ernest owns apartments, and he owns real estate, and he owns restaurants. Plus, he's a chiropractor, right? So he's a businessman in all different aspects. But you kind of wanted to get into restaurants, which then kind of ended up making you fall back in love a little bit more with chiropractic after. Just maybe tell about that kind of circle.
Yeah. So I believe that, you know, when I overdid the chiropractic, right, and I dove right in there, and I was getting a little bit burnt out, you know, when, you know, you're seeing a lot of patients, you're processing patients, you're there, you know, working your butt off, of course, serving your patients. And you're like, wow, I don't know if this is really, you know, taking a lot of my energy and, you know, my time, space, taken away from my family time. So
I think, can I do this forever?
Yeah. Can I do this forever? So I'm like, well, you know what? There must be easier ways to make money than chiropractic. Right. So I started investing in other things. Right. So, you know,
so the bad investment was the one.
That was one.
But then the better ones.
Like, yes, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Then, you know, then I grew up working in restaurants. So ever since I was 14, I started washing dishes and became a line cook, a prep cook, a kitchen supervisor, bartender, server. So, you know, I was in the restaurant business for 14 years, and all through university and chiropractic school, I was working in that industry. So I felt very comfortable, and I knew the industry. So I always had a fantasy and dream about owning my own restaurant and owning my own pub and things like that. So,
yeah
so I, you know, back, I think, what, 2007, 2008, probably around time. Yeah. So I ended up buying a restaurant that did really well, you know, a franchised restaurant. So I didn't really have to do a lot of work, but so I did that, and then I ended up buying a pub, and you know, of course, and then you realize it's not that easy, right? And and you learn about profit margins, and you learn about you know,
when you sell a beer for like $6 or $7 and you only make like a dollar or something.
Yeah, so you have to sell, like, you know, but you know, your adjustment skills, you know, there's nothing more profitable as a business as a whole as, you know, selling your services for, you know, especially if you can process, you know, X amount of patients per hour. Right. You know, so at the time I had this fantasy that, oh, it's easier outside of chiropractic. And I realized now, you know what? Everything takes work. Yeah. No matter what business you're in,
right,
you got to work. But I realized, you know what, with all the knowledge that we have learned, because I've learned from, I would say at my time anyways, there's so many great chiropractic consultants and coaches out there, but I would say I probably read and studied over 100 of these manuals.
Yeah.
So I pretty much have, you know, I've traveled to different cities to shadow some of the highest volume chiropractors in the world, you know, lived with them, broke bread with them.
Yeah.
So I can see the amount of work it takes. So I think nowadays we have a much more realistic expectation of what a practice can do. And yeah, so I went from restaurants, and I still own the pub, but I sold the restaurant, you know, for a good profit.
Yes.
That was good. So it made up for the bad investment. And, you know, I think Dee Martini told us years ago, it's like, no matter what you do, you know, most people get 6 to 8%. I think we're probably still in that range.
Yeah.
So with the bad, we get the good.
Right. You're just slow and steady wins the race.
And steady wins the race. Yeah. So, and then, you know, I ended up opening a second chiropractic practice. So I'm like, okay, well, screw these restaurants. I'm going back into chiropractic. So.
So that's been good. And it's a little bit challenging up here in Edmonton. We're just talking about it because we have no chiropractic schools around here, and we don't get very many new grads coming up here, so finding associates is really difficult. I've talked to other people who have multiple clinics, and if their town is close to a chiropractic school, they get a lot more options. So it is a little bit more challenging for us up here, right?
Absolutely.
just like for us, we have Dr. Curtis now, who is, he's an awesome guy, and we've waited for him for over a year just because we didn't want to jump in with someone else, because it's so important. If you do get associates or you're working with somebody that you can, that they're actually the right fit.
Yes, absolutely.
It also can create a lot of strife if it's not.
Right? Absolutely. Right. And yeah. And, you know, I think, and this is, you know, after all these years and, you know, of going through, you know, several, you know, great coaches and, you know, being able to run a successful practice, for many years, right. Both of us, you know, we have a lot to offer new grads, and, you know, I know my two guys, that are in my practice, right. You know, they provide some energy and, you know, I can provide some guidance, and I think it's a great long-term win-wins for people.
Yeah, well, that's great. Now for, you know, we got the Underdog Nation out there for people who feel like an underdog or they are an underdog. What kind of advice would you have? Like, if there's someone out there who's struggling, maybe they're a little bit overwhelmed, they're just starting a new practice, what kind of advice would you have for those people out there listening?
Well, number one, you know, I believe that, you know, I've seen Don evolve from the number one underdog, because, you know, it takes an underdog to, you know, recognize an underdog, because I grew up when I was younger as a obese child. I actually weighed the same amount as I do now when I was 12 years old. So I would realize, now I realize, you know, the things that you don't like about yourself when you meet people, you know, you have a reflection on this. So I would meet another obese kid in my class, like it'd be a new semester and I see another kid, and automatically I see this other fat kid and I'd be like, something about you I don't like. And then we'd go to the gym, and, you know, remember when you had to run laps and stuff?
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't care if I come in last, I just want to beat him. Right. Or we'd get picked for sports. I'm like, you know what? I just want to be picked before him.
Right.
And, you know, and he'd be the same way with me. And we were like, okay, well, yeah, what is it that we don't like of each other? And we realize now, right?
Yeah.
Right. So I think the point I was getting at here was, you know, what were you talking about just before this?
No, I was just talking about, like, being like giving advice for underdogs.
Oh, yes. Yes. In terms of the underdogs. Yeah. So I think when you start off as an underdog, right, you look, you know, when you have that stress in your life and you see other, I believe that you see, you know, people tend to seek confirmation, with themselves. So, you know, it all goes back to who you hang out with.
Right.
So if you hang out with other struggling chiropractors, or other struggling business owners, you kind of, you know, vouch for each other that, oh, it's the economy, it's the weather, it's the, you know, whatever
location.
You can blame, location, you know, it's just, you know, it's the profession, you get into that blame, and, you know, you basically sit there and you affirm each other's pittiness.
Yeah.
So my first recommendations for, you know, anyone who's struggling out there is to, number one, realize that if you keep doing what you're doing, you'll get the same results, right? So yeah, do something different. And the easiest thing to do is start with, you know, the people you hang out with.
Yeah.
Right. Because I know that when I first moved to the city, I don't remember this, but right after I met you, I was asking you, I'm like, so who are the guys in Edmonton who actually, you know, see some volume, right? And then remember we used to meet at my office?
Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
I basically formed a mastermind group.
And then we did a screening group.
Yes, yes, and a screening group, yeah. So I basically would seek out, I wanted to know who the guys in the city that were actually movers and shakers in the city.
Yeah.
And Don gave me some lists, and I asked around, and I personally called each and every one of them, and I said, hey, I'm a high flyer, and you want to join my mastermind group, don't you? And pretty much every single person did. And we'd meet, I think, once a month. And and really speaking, I would lead the group. But I'd be like, so what do you do for your ROF? What do you do for this? And I'd be actually learning more from them than they would from me. But they thought I was like the guy who was teaching them everything.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's kind of neat that way. But, you know, so the first advice I'd give is, you know what, seek out
people who make you a little uncomfortable, right? At the time I was broke, and these other chiropractors, you know, driving up in BMWs and things like that. Remember that?
Yeah, totally.
Right. And my office was like, okay, well, I've got my Tony's tables here and my Lifetimer portable tables that I bought at chiropractic school.
Remember that one time we had a meeting we had a mastermind meeting. And then that one drug person came in, and we didn't even see. They walked in, and they went to the bathroom. They started like shooting up in the bathroom.
Yeah,
and we were like, "What the heck? We're trying to get him out." That was like, yeah, that was one of the memories of the mastermind.
Yes, yes, for sure. So get out of your comfort zone and go seek out some different people who you know, elevate you. They might not necessarily make you feel comfortable, but you know. I did that, you know, when you're a big fish in a small pond and suddenly you stand in front of, you know, big fish. Suddenly, you know what, it's human nature to try to compare yourself, and, you know, that little bit of rubbing will help elevate your game for sure.
Yeah. Well, I want to thank you too, because when I met you, that was basically 6 years in practice, and I plateaued out, and I think I was seeing about anywhere between 140 to 150 a week. And I remember, because I was also president of the Edmonton Chiropractic Society, and I like love chiropractic, and I was trying to help everybody else. And then you made me feel uncomfortable, because you came up to me and you said, do you remember that? And you said, Don, like, you love chiropractic. You're a great chiropractor and you do so much for chiropractic. Why does your practice suck? Like, basically, and this was
I didn't say those terms.
I know Brandy said the same thing afterward, but you and Brandy said the same thing to me, like probably within about a 6 month time frame. And it made me feel bad about myself, but it was like, true. It was just like, because it was time to step into my brilliance. And what was great was, even though I'd been in practice for 6 years and I was kind of stagnant, hanging out with a young guy who was just starting out and was just growing their practice. Just that feedback just kind of spun off it. And then we created the screening group, and we booked like 7 screenings in the first year.
Oh yeah.
And that was when I'd never done screenings before in my life. Yeah. And we got out there, and that's when everything changed. So we got our whiskey glass. So I'm going to cheers with our fancy ice ball there.
Yes.
You can hear it dingling around. So anything else you want to share before we close out our podcast?
You know what? Everything's an evolution, right? You know, when I first met Don, he only drank one type of beer, and he started drinking domestic beers, and you know, and then he started growing and started getting into the fancy import beers, and now he's into Scotch. I never imagined that John would be drinking Scotch.
Well, and that's just only because of brandy, and that's also because of Dr. Peter DeMarco.
And that's, and then again, if you want to use alcoholic beverages as a, you know, kind of an example, it's who you hang out with, right?
Right.
You know, at the time when you're hanging out with the guys at Coca-Cola and your basketball team, you know what?
They'd be ordering, we're looking like, for like discounted drafts.
Yeah, the cheapest drink, right? Now you're getting to the Scotch, right? Where, as you know, when you buy, you know, 18-year-old, 20-year-old Scotch, and like, yeah, it's getting up there, right?
That's
so it's
cool.
If all the people you hang out with drink Scotch, guess what?
You're going to do pretty good.
Exactly. So you can end at that one, I guess.
That's awesome. Hey, well, thanks for being on the podcast. Super
awesome.
Appreciate
this was
it.
Fun. Thanks for inviting me.
I'm really happy to be able to share like my mastermind buddy that I've had for all these years here in Edmonton with the Underdog Nation. So take some of the notes. Don't badly invest your money. Hang out with some awesome people, and don't forget to crush the curse.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you receive value from this episode, please take some time to rate and review us on iTunes or your favorite place to listen to podcasts. If you know a fellow chiropractor that could benefit from this message, please share it with them. Because it's my goal to provide you with great content, please contact me if you have any questions at drdonmcdonald.com or find me on Facebook. I look forward to hearing from you. So until next time, Dr. Don out.